You're listening to the Plain Label Podcast, and on this episode, we continue our theme of audience versus critics. Hello, and welcome to the Plain Label Podcast. I am your host, Rachel Zelag, and along with me is my good friend and co-host, Eric Esmeralda Williams.
Hello.
In our concluding look of audiences versus critics, with a discussion on the film of Boondock Saints and Gosford Park, people have been drinking.
People were writing the script quickly on this one.
Sure, and drunk. Before getting into our discussion, we would like to mention that we are proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Go to deliberatenoise.com and check out the other shows over there. Mr. Williams, what are you drinking?
Well, I'm having something that I got via the Rachel Zelag household.
Oh, no.
for listeners that... Well, I guess they'll hear about it in a couple of weeks with a different episode. We were recently over with the Zelags, and we got this Chinese food. And with the Chinese food, they just gave us a 2 liter of soda.
Oh, yeah.
And so Anel picked out, it's a Mist Twist, I think is what it's called. It's like a knockoff of Sierra Mist, which is a knockoff of Sprite.
Right.
And so I'm having that and some Svedka vodka.
You're such a classy gal.
I know. I really am. I'm classy as fuck. So what are you having this evening?
Well, going along with our theme of party leftovers, I'm drinking the last Radler that was in the fridge.
Oh, nice.
So I really enjoy that. It's a very sparkly, gingery beverage. So.
It sounds good. Sounds very good. Okay, so, this is going to be an interesting discussion, I feel like.
Mm.
So, like we said, we're concluding the audience versus critics. We're going to start in the very late 90s with Rachel's pick. It is from 1999, and it is The Boondock Saints.
On the streets of Boston.
This was no gangland assassination.
It was way too sloppy. Something went wrong here.
An FBI agent is on a case.
All the lowlifes in the quiet city of Boston start dropping dead, and you think it's unrelated.
They're all bad guys. Now they're all dead bad guys.
The victims are the mob.
We have here, gentlemen, is the beginning of the first international mob war.
And the hitmen think they're on a mission from God.
Anybody you think is evil, don't you think that's a little weird, a little psycho?
Sort of like 7-Eleven. We're not always doing business, but we're always open.
That is nice and cozy.
There was two shooters.
Bane, freaking tasty.
This guy's very sharp. He hasn't figured us out yet, he will.
All we know is what we found out from the neighbors. And the general consensus is, they're angels.
Amen.
In a place where the violent have the power.
Destroy all that which is evil, so that which is good may flourish.
One lawman doesn't know whether to catch the killers.
I believe what they do is necessary.
Or join them.
All the things I wish I could do, these guys are doing.
With every breath, we shall hunt them down.
Each day, we will spill their blood.
There was a firefight!
Saints.
Irish brothers Connor and Murphy McManus live and work in Boston, feeling that God's will to rid Earth from all human evil was given to them as a mission. That escalated quickly.
Yeah, really.
They set out to do their divine deed. A public outcry is never heard, and even FBI agent Paul Smecker, who follows their trace of bloodshed, admits the boys are doing exactly what he secretly always has wished to happen, risking their lives for their beliefs of Veritas and Equitas. Is that how you say it?
Yes.
The Boondock Saints are hyped by the public, for they are doing good, which only a few dare to admit. This person might need to be checked into.
to investigate further.
Right.
IMDb. I'm just gonna put that out there. They are doing the good work.
They're doing the Lord's work.
Yeah.
Mowing people down.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so the Boondock Saints. This is a film that both of us own.
Yes. Judgy.
This is a film that I was like, did I sell that already? No, I didn't. Oh, okay, I have it. Do you have this? You can borrow mine. You're like, no, I have it too. I'm like, okay.
So
why don't you tell me why you picked this movie and when you had first come across it?
I picked this movie because it was on a list of movies that audiences loved but critics didn't. Mm-hmm. and I was like, what? Critics didn't like this movie? No. So the first time I saw this was in college, so like mid-2000s, and I was like hanging out with some people, and they were like, have you seen Boondock Saints? It's awesome. And I'm like, no, but I love shooting and Irish people. And they're like, oh my god, and this is going to be great. And I watched it in college and was like, this is great. And so then that was pretty much it. And we've been to the church in Boston that they go to.
Oh, that first one?
Yeah.
The Protestant church?
Yeah.
I believe it's either a Protestant church or like a Lutheran church.
I don't remember. It was like 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. Well, the reason I bring that up is because they were refused their attempt to film in a Catholic church because of the content of the film.
But it's the Lord's work. What? I don't understand.
We're,
it doesn't make any sense.
What's going on here, guys? We're having some miscommunication, I feel like.
Right? Whoa, whoa, wee, whoa.
Apparently you guys have not read the IMDb summary of this film. Okay, so you saw it, I'm guessing just, so it was just like a casual watch, and you got sort of like, here, you'll probably like this kind of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, somebody's watching their dorm room, and I was like, awesome, I'll watch this. And then it's just a movie that I obviously enjoy enough to buy, so.
Yeah. I think I'm in a pretty similar boat. I don't really recall the first time I saw this, but it's been a film that I've always known about, I feel like, or I've owned it for a long time. And it's, you know, it's like the, it's either the director's cut or like the special edition or something. And then I'm like, oh, okay. So this has got, it's like a 2-disc deal, and I open it up and it's the shitty, like widescreen on one side and full screen on one, the other side.
Right.
DVD. And I'm like, oh geez, fucking 1990s in their DVD making. Yeah, really. And so I was like, oh, you know, I was surprised that I still had it because my initial view on the film was, oh, it's so, like, how cool. They're not following any rules. You know, they're
right
out and killing people and saying fuck a ridiculous amount of times, which when I was in college, I was like, all right, you know, they're sticking it to the man, and they have all of these, typical sort of stock characters, and I was really apparently digging it because, like we've already belabored, I went out and purchased this movie. So why don't you... Okay, no, I can't wait. I'm going to go ahead and tell you what I thought about this movie, Cruz.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I really genuinely struggled. Like, I wanted to turn it off so badly. I felt I was going through like a roller coaster of emotions in this.
Oh, so boy.
I'm watching the movie, and at first I'm like, how could I have ever liked this? What the fuck was wrong with me when I first saw this movie? How could I have not seen that this is like freshman English writing that got turned into a movie.
100% true.
And then I'm watching and I'm like, oh, okay, well, and we can talk about the specific points later, but I'm like, well, I don't know. I kind of like that part there. And then later I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is offensive. And then I'm like, so I'm just like all over the place with the film, right? Ultimately, like I could have just turned it off and went based on my memory and just kind of BS'd it and been totally fine. Because I ended up watching and I'm like, oh yeah, I do remember this. Okay. And then I'm, you know,
but you probably wouldn't have hated it as much.
That is true.
You would have had like a better feeling about it.
That's true. It's on and I'm starting to like, oh, let's see. I better check my phone. I got this other podcast I could probably edit a little bit of and
read a book.
I got to download this file here. You know, I'm doing that kind of stuff while it's on. Meanwhile, I'm catching like the high and the low points of the film.
The high and the high points.
Yeah, yeah, the high and the higher points. The Lord's work is what I was catching. And I mean, I really struggled. Like, I really didn't like it. So why don't you tell me, without getting into specifics there, as I was trying not to do, why don't you tell me what you thought about it this time around?
I did not have nearly as hard of a time as you did.
Okay.
Yes, it's fairly obvious that it's not, you know, a very, let me think, like, well-written, I guess, movie.
how do I say not very well-written?
I was gonna say, like, I was trying to think of, like, a comparative movie where the dialogue is amazing and things like that, but I really am just blanking right now, so. Anyway, but I feel like I knew what I was getting myself into, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew it was a bunch of it's a shoot-em-up movie with a lot of swears, and yeah, some of the offensiveness, made me cringe, to be honest with you, but. Mm-hmm. You know, college Rachel didn't even know what offensive meant. So that was, I was like, what is that, football? Is that football? So I don't know, maybe I was in the right mindset where I'm like, oh yeah, this is like, these are horrible, like dialogue and shit. But I mean, like the shooting scenes, I'm like, yeah, that's cool. You know, so like, I didn't struggle with it. I feel nearly as much as you did, but let me think. This movie came out in the theaters right now as a premise, I probably would see it, but I would be a lot more disappointed. I think nostalgia plays a pretty big part in me giving this movie a break.
Mm-hmm.
So if it came out right now, same dialogue, kind of same thing, I'd be like, oh god, they could have delivered that better. But for 1999, I was like, yeah, that's legit.
Yeah, it would be interesting to have someone, to have this be a first watch for somebody with sort of like modern sensibilities.
Right. Yes.
And I'm specifically thinking about, not only is it really sexist, because we have what, maybe one woman in the film that's not either a hooker or a druggie.
Which? What?
It's like it's the very clearly lesbian stand-in at the very, very beginning.
Oh, at the plant.
Yeah, during the...
Talk about the rule of thumb.
The opening montage, who just decides, like, I'm going to spout my feminine agenda on my first day of work. And they have that ridiculous... I mean, that's one of the things where it's like, did you know the rule of thumb? And I was like, oh, Jesus. This is so... like, even if it's making a good point, I was like, this is so poorly written. Like... that they used to use the blah, 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 and it's like, well, it should have been the rule of the fist or rule of the wrist or whatever the fuck. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, God. It's like, I paused it at that point and wrote down. I was like, I can't believe I've got 90 more minutes of this shit. And I also put, you need to grow up, you fucks, because these guys are how old? They're supposed to be at least in their 20s, right?
And they're like, I would say late 20s for sure.
Yeah. And they're like pulling pranks on each other while at work with the chicken meat or the beef or whatever they've got in there.
Yeah. And then they're like fighting in the vent Well, yeah. They're going to go kill those guys. But, like, if you're in college, if you're 18 years old watching this movie, you're like, not you. Like, I'm not, like, saying that. No, but, like, 18-year-old Rachel watching this movie is like, oh, my God, it's hilarious. Mm-hmm. And they have guns, and they're shooting, and they're so funny. Because, like, I still think that, like, being stupid was funny. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure, so,
like,
yeah.
It really caters to a certain age group at the very least, and then sensibility on a broader scale, I think.
Yeah, what I put was this is the ultimate, like, high school to college dude sort of movie. And dude spelled D-O-O-D, like that kind of a dude, you know? Because it's sexist, it's violent, it's too cool for work, but it also has the softer, like, rebellious but yet still religious side. And it's like, oh, yeah. I can be chill when I need to be chill, but otherwise I'm just a rowdy, looking for a good time kind of guy. It's that movie. Right?
I do think, though, that the premise is very interesting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I didn't mention that because I didn't want to interrupt you earlier, which I'm clearly just feeling free to interrupt you now.
Right.
But I think that the premise is good. Like, I do like the premise. I wish it even would have pushed it a little further where they have that sort of leaky roof calling of God sort of thing. Where they,
what do you mean?
They like wake up and either the roof's leaking or there's like a thunderstorm or whatever. And that's when they feel like they're getting like a calling to do this stuff. I wish they would have even pushed that a little more. And I think I would have bought along or gone along with the movie a little bit more here. I just felt like, oh, they both had a weird nightmare and they're like longingly staring into each other's eyes.
Right. And I was just like, they don't have shirts on.
Yeah. And so that I was just like, okay, well, I kind of think that's cool. And one of the other things that I really liked about it is I really liked the recreations of the scenes that Willem Dafoe was doing. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked that too. The after the fact, piece it back together idea. I always thought that was really cool too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think I would like to, and I haven't seen the second one because I can only imagine.
Oh, I can't even. I can't imagine.
But I mean, like I said, the premise is interesting to me. I would like to see them push it, like, in a way where they catch someone doing something gray area bad, and they have to, like, wrestle with how bad, like, what's bad enough.
Sure, like, maybe one thinks it's bad enough and the other doesn't.
Right, yeah. I mean, because, like, the people that they're taking out are obviously horribly, like, bad people.
Yeah.
Like mob bosses and things like that. So I'd like to see, you know, asking too much probably now, but like an actual conversation about like, you know, what are we doing here? And like, who are we supposed to be, you know, but, I don't know. I thought that would be maybe an interesting little twist.
Yeah. Yeah. So we mentioned briefly, Willem Dafoe, but let's talk a little bit about, first of all, what the hell is the deal with his name? Paul Smecker. Like, what is that? That just seems
like,
that was like just flipping the phone book open and finding a last name kind of thing, or?
Or like you have a friend that's like, put me in the movie.
Yeah, probably.
You're like, oh, cool, whatever.
Yeah. So I did think his entrance was completely ridiculous, but I was sort of like, I couldn't help myself from being like, oh, I kind of like that. I don't know.
He's my favorite character.
Well,
maybe, no, Rocco's too much of an idiot.
Well,
I would say that Willem Dafoe is my favorite character for sure.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe, I mean.
Or the bagel guy.
Is
the bagel cop.
Yeah. Is Willem Dafoe ever been more like outlandish and just chewing up the scenery in any movie ever? Because he's just like, I'm just going to fucking go for it. Like, first take. Just my worst instincts. I'm just going to do it. And then we'll go from there. And every time they're like, nope, print, good.
Right. I do what I want.
Moving
basically.
On. Yeah.
I do like the twist, and they always tell you, you know, to, when you're creating a character, to take a regular stock character and give it a twist. I liked that he was gay. I thought that was an interesting twist.
I could have gone without, the homophobic slurs though. I was like, whoa.
Right.
Really?
So like, you you make this character gay and then you still have like the very offensive, like it's contradicting itself, and I don't know.
Well,
but
it's
anyway.
Like that felt like it was in there to where it's like, well, he's gay, but he's not like gay. He's like
right,
cool gay.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that makes it so much worse. Like just he can just be gay. Like what's the big deal?
Right. Everyone is cool. Adjective in this movie. He's like Italian, but he's like cool Italian.
Yeah, he's like cool Russian, but he's like a badass Russian guy.
He's like a bartender with Tourette's, like a cool bartender.
Oh my god, I fucking hated that guy.
Okay, so the only other thing that I have seen that guy in ever in my life is one of my favorite like movies of all time when I was little. It was a Muppet, a Very Muppet Christmas, and he was like the only non-Muppet in the whole movie, and he had a dog, and the Muppets came to his house for Christmas.
Oh,
and, like,
interesting.
That was these are the only two times I've ever seen that person. I think he's actually passed away, so, like, these are my only memories of this guy, is, like, singing loving child songs with the Muppets, and then saying fuck 17 times. So, like, very confusing for me.
Really? That's really funny. Okay, so we talked a little bit about Smecker as the character, and what I think I like about him is I really liked the idea, maybe not always the execution, but I really liked the idea of he puts in his headphones and he's able to recreate. I think he's a little ridiculous when he does then there was a firefight!
Right.
That was a little much, but I was like, well, whatever, fucking go for it. You know,
I love that he said there was like 8 men with guns though.
Oh, and then the bagel guy gets it right finally.
Yeah. Only they tell him he's got it wrong so much that it cries wolf on it. They're like, mm-hmm. Okay, you're stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. So I liked that it was classical music. Oh, speaking of the bagel guy, I wrote down that scene where he's trying to figure out what happened. That literally to me looked like it was an SNL skit. Like the way that it was shot, I was like, this looks so cheap. I was like, this looks like you literally just built this shitty set. It didn't even look like it was a real Boston Alley to me. And there
was a freaking huge guy thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And he's like, and this fucking guy. Yeah. It was that kind of stuff. And they're like, no, pretty thin. And then he, you know, switches it up, whatever. So I had issues with that. It's funny because I had like large swaths where I didn't write anything because I could tell I wrote, the ultimate dude opening, you know, up there. And then I put most of this is so goddamn freshman creative writing shit.
Yeah. So I obviously didn't do any homework on this, regardless of the fact that I've known this movie's around for like 20 years. Do you know, like, who is in charge of this movie? Like, did this person do other movies? I guess we can.
Ooh, I do know this information.
Surprise.
Okay, so, it was written and directed by Troy Duffy. He was one of the characters at the bar, in that opening bar scene.
Okay.
And there is a documentary about the making of this movie.
Okay.
And it is, let's see if I can figure out where it is. Son of a bitch. Where the hell is it? It's a story about how he sold this movie and he sold this script and then he went to Miramax and they sort of had notes for him and wanted him to change different things and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And he was not pleased, and it was really a pretty damning documentary about him, about how he's not a bright guy. And he, in my opinion, and the film writers of that documentary, and it was just kind of like a dude that it seemed like he was going to be the next big thing in Hollywood. And he seemed to believe that he was going to be a big thing too. And so he was
already a big thing.
Yeah, and so he was like, you know, living it up and talking all this shit. And it was, I mean, it's a really good documentary. It's called Overnight. And it was on Netflix at one point. I'm not sure if it still is or not.
Not The Overnight. That's a different movie.
No, I like that movie a lot, actually. But it's super uncomfortable, but I like that a lot. Yeah, it looks like it is on Netflix. So there you go. So you can check that out if you want. But it's called Overnight, and it is fascinating with a lot of the behind the scenes stuff. And it's, you know, in the late 90s, so there's not a lot of internet really. And it's talking about, you know, him going through magazines, and the script went for so much, and he was, you know, like I said, going to be this big deal, and this movie was going to be a huge thing. And he was like, this is going to be the greatest movie of all time. And like actually meant that. And I was like, oh boy, what?
He wrote it too though, right?
Yeah. He wrote it and directed it. And it was a first time thing for both.
So it sounds like this was kind of his baby.
Absolutely. And then he wrote,
like he can...
and he wrote and directed the sequel too.
Okay.
Which is 10 years later. So, yeah, so that's kind of what that is. And I do, I would rather people see Overnight than I would the Boondock Saints, so that's an interesting look at the film. Why don't you tell me about something else that you enjoyed about the movie?
I guess we've already talked about it, but I do like the action scenes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's basically, when it comes down to it, this is an action movie that has kind of an interesting twist on why it's an action movie, I guess. And so I liked the shoot 'em ups. I liked the slow motion stuff. The thing with the rope and the Russian mob meeting is semi-unbelievable, but still super entertaining for me.
That was a really, I will concede that that's a super cool shot where they're caught in the rope and they're falling out of the vent.
Yeah.
And they're upside down, spinning around and just nailing everybody.
Yeah. When Rocco asks if the cat's dead.
after it's splattered all over the wall.
Oh my God. So yeah, I mean, like I said, you struggled with this a lot more than I did. I would probably sit through this again, no problem.
Interesting.
I mean, those are the things that I liked. I did not enjoy Ron Jeremy at all.
Oh, no.
He's disgusting.
I didn't enjoy him. And I think I was really struggling with Rocco. And the reason I was struggling with him is because he felt like a manifestation of the film, to where he was at 11 the entire movie.
Yep. I remember college Rachel thought Rocco was real cool, and Rachel now did not agree with that. She shunned the shit out of college Rachel.
Yeah.
For thinking.
It was like, yeah, he had funny lines and there was good bits with him in it. But I was like, wow, for a while this movie is focused more on Rocco and what he's doing as opposed to what's going on with this sort of mission that God has given these two brothers.
Yeah. And I could really do without the tell me a joke part.
Oh yeah. That was bad. That was not great.
God.
Although it is fairly relevant to today's political climate.
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, like, you could have put, I don't know, any offensive joke in there. It's just interesting to see, cause a lot, I feel like when I watch like a Quentin Tarantino movie, I feel like a lot of their dialogue is like things that he thinks or has like had a conversation about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
there's like a piece of writer or director in it. And so I'm like, I feel like you get a feel for whoever wrote the script by like the topics of conversation and the jokes they tell. And so, I just don't know about that choice, I guess. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's
telling, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's tough to not have a part of you seep into your writing.
Of course, yeah.
And so, it's like you could have written anything just there, and it's not like he was writing it to appease the the Russian boss.
Or to move the plot along. Like, it could have literally been any joke ever there. I mean, why did the chicken cross the road? Probably wouldn't have cut it, but...
I don't know. What do we think about Billy Connolly's character, the sort of imprisoned for 30 years guy that gets out and all that stuff?
I think he's, like, fairly awesome.
Now, see, I liked him quite a bit. I thought that it had... that he had an interesting look for the movie.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, I like it that it's like an older dude that still is really dangerous, and he's got the sweet suit with all of the guns all over the place.
Yes.
And I was like, that's pretty cool. He does the good, which is now everywhere, the sort of the look down, eyes up move. Like the head tilted down and the eyes looking up, so you get like the... just the top of their eyes. He does that thing in jail really well.
Wasn't that on Beverly Hills in 90210?
It could have been.
With the sunglasses?
Yeah, that's... No. It's a little... it's pretty similar,
different?
I guess.
Different? Okay, okay.
So he... I thought he did a good job at that. I know it's supposed to be the big sort of takeaway of the film, but I really could have done without the whole courtroom scene at the end of the movie. Where they're sort of preaching?
I don't know if I would do away with the whole scene. Okay. I liked the fact that we're working together now, and that's kind of like, you know, the resolution of the movie where apparently the Smecker agrees enough to be like, yeah, I'm going to help you do this, because this guy was obviously going to get out of jail. The very blatant two men talking during the scene said, this guy's going to get away with it, which we probably could have done without. But I don't know. I think, like we talked about, the dialogue and the flow isn't necessarily the best. But I think having that scene in there is important, but could have maybe been done a little bit differently.
Okay, so how about, like, structurally it fits, but maybe if it was written well, that would have gone down a little better.
Yeah, yep.
Does that sound good?
That's where I am, yeah.
Because it's like when, I think it's Sean Patrick Flannery, who's the more serious of the two brothers, right, when he's delivering that scene, and it just, it felt like I was giving a monologue to someone that I just whipped up real quick in class. And it's like, here, just read this and just project, and we'll just kind of see how it goes.
Make sure you have a gun.
Yeah. And they're reading it, and I'm like, and Sean Patrick Flannery, I mean, he's giving it his all, but I'm watching it going, oh God, like this is a rough take. Like, how is this the take you used? And I'm like, well, maybe it's just because it's that poorly written. And maybe because the guy that wrote and directed this has zero taste about this sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
like,
I don't know what the budget is either.
I don't think it was that much. I want to say it was a couple million, 7 million roughly, which in, you know, is probably, it's like a mid-level, kind of a deal. But for a nobody, $7 million is a pretty decent opening movie.
Right, I would take that.
Yeah, you'd use $7 million and make like this quiet, neurotic sort of writer-based movie. It'd be good.
Yeah. So what do you think of the, like, the prayer that they say before they shoot people?
Ridiculous.
What?
In college, I thought that was pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, yeah, they're saying Latin, and oh, they know all these languages, which was established earlier in the movie for no apparent reason, really. And this time around, I was watching it going, just get on with it. Like, get it over with. Like, I get that you're saying this thing every time, but I've had my fill. I'm good.
You say it every time. But...
well, not every single time, but it gave me the impression that on the real important ones, they were saying it.
Yeah.
I take it by that line of questioning, though, that you enjoyed that?
I think I'm, like, the same. Like, in college, I was like, oh, my God, that's amazing. I think, like, I saw someone has the tattoos on their finger.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, God, that's so cool.
In real life or in the movie?
I'm pretty sure in real life.
Oh, no.
I've seen that. I don't know. I really like I said, the religious aspect of this. So I like that they, you know, go to church. They still go to confession. And they, that's like obviously a giant part of what's going on. I like how they fall into it too. They didn't just like decide that one day they like woke up. Cause I feel like that is borderline mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
It like happened and they just happened to like get in a bar fight, which is the best way to start any movie. I like that they kind of fell into it, but I think that that prayer kind of just like, you know, is obviously part of their characters, and they, I just wish they would have gone into that a little bit more, because I feel like they're torn. They think they're doing, you know, things that they should be doing and taking out bad guys that wouldn't normally, you know, would basically be able to buck the system, and they still feel bad about it, obviously. And I just kind of wish that was like more addressed than just like saying fuck 17 times. And so I don't know. I mean, I didn't struggle with it like you did.
Yeah. But I think where I land on it is I think I'm starting to realize now as we're talking that I'm upset with the movie because I think that there could be a good movie in there.
Yeah.
And it was just executed in my eyes so, like, so basic, I guess, to use a modern term. It's just so poorly and, like, sort of amateurish in the way that it was executed that I feel like there's good parts and it could have been something really good, and it just isn't what it should have been.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would be interested to see what the notes were that he got.
Yeah.
For changes.
Yeah, really. So I don't know. So I guess in the hands of someone,
Nolan.
Oh well, there you go. There's your next project, Boondock Saints 3, Christopher Nolan reboot. I'm so sure that's gonna happen.
Oh my God, can you imagine? They go to some cave and like fight, like learn how to fight. And then they have to like, oh my God, I'm picturing it right now.
They're like in the Inception world that's going upside down having this firefight and stuff.
Yeah. And somehow they're like allowed to go into like, you know, talk to Jesus at one point. Like shit gets real.
Well, see, there you go. You just have Tom Hardy be one of the brothers.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
You see him shirtless a lot. This is the,
and who's the other guy that's always in Chris Nolan movies?
It could be Jonathan or Joseph Gordon-Levitt or Michael Fassbender, or there's plenty of other like young men that we could put in there. Michael Caine is probably the old guy.
Yes, or the bartender.
Yeah, really.
No, it's the guy that was he was one of the bad guys in the Batman film. He has very blue eyes. And
oh,
he's British.
Cillian Murphy is who that is. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
There you go.
He could be the other brother.
You could set it in, the shitty part of London. They can speak with Cockney
yes!
accents.
Yes! Oh my God. It's amazing.
It's going to happen.
People were way more religious back then.
Look for the reboot written by me and Rachel and directed by Christopher Nolan coming soon.
That is like literally, no, that's not right, because Jack the Ripper, he killed prostitutes, and that's mean. Never mind. Yeah. I was going to try to tie that in, but it's not going to work. But I scrapped that idea right on the cutting board.
There you go. That's good. Self-editing is a good time. So anything else about the Boondock Saints before we move on to our quite different other selection?
No.
Okay. So we should mention that we are not only sponsored by the Deliberate Noise Network, but we are sponsored by Audible.com. For you, the listeners of Plain Label Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial. For this episode, and for Rachel specifically, our Audible recommendation is Murder on the Orient Express.
I talked about this book today to someone.
Really?
I'm not even kidding. Yes.
Written by Agatha Christie. Narrated by Dan Stevens. The audiobook is 6.5 hours long, which isn't too bad for a audiobook. And it's normally $21.67, which is strange because that's how Audible does things. That's always like a weird number. But you can get yours for free today. To download your free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/plainlabel Again, that is audibletrial.com/plainlabel for your free audiobook.
And I always get the longest audiobooks.
You do? So you get your money's worth?
Right, man.
Smart. Some of those are like, you know, 20, 30 hours, and you're like, dang, that's only one credit?
Right?
I will win. I will buy that. That would normally cost me like $50.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, so our second film, this is, again, which I like saying each time, this is much different. This is my selection, and it is from 2001, and it is called Gosford Park.
At the country house of Sir William McCordle, the guests are wealthy.
If I wanted coffee, I'd have rung for it.
He thinks he's God Almighty. They all do.
Privileged.
Ooh, yum.
What's she like to work for?
She's a snobbish cow.
Famous.
Mr. Wiseman's very odd. Apparently, he produces motion pictures.
Hello, I'm Morris Wiseman.
Who?
The servants are loyal.
I just wanted to be sure you had everything you need.
Discreet.
You shouldn't sneak up on people like that.
Don't worry, it's nobody.
Devoted.
Thank you. Oh, got some hair on your dress.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Weissman, tell us about the film you're going to make.
It's a detective story. Murder in the middle of the night, a lot of guests for the weekend, everyone's a suspect.
And who turns out to have done it?
Oh, I couldn't tell you that. It would spoil it for you.
No, but none of us is it.
Why would anyone want to kill him?
Well, he wasn't exactly Father Christmas.
I think he's got something to hide, that one.
Do you think he's a murderer?
It's worse than that. He's an actor.
About that low bullet that nearly killed him that morning they were out.
So, we haven't dusted those things for fingerprints yet, hmm?
Good.
USA Films presents a film by Robert Altman.
I was just wondering if you wanted some company.
Well, I suppose life must go on.
Alan Bates, Stephen Fry, Michael Gambon, Derek Jacobi, Kelly MacDonald, Helen Mirren, Jeremy Northam, Clive Owen, Ryan Phillippe, Kristen Scott Thomas, Maggie Smith, Emily Watson.
Tough luck on whoever's got any secrets to hide.
Oh, how horrid.
Gosford Park.
Perhaps the butler did it.
Set in the 1930s, the story takes place in an old-fashioned English country house where a weekend shooting party is underway. The story centers on the McCordy family, particularly the man of the house, William McCordle. Getting on in years, William has become benefactor to many of his relatives and friends. As the weekend goes on, secrets are revealed, and it seems everyone, above stairs and below, wants a piece of William and his money, but how far will they go to get it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so the reason that I picked this film was this is one of those that I hadn't seen, and I wasn't doing it for like the marathon that I did where I was doing a movie a day, quite a few years back now, but it was a thing where I was like, oh, this looks interesting. It's, you know, it was suggested via Netflix to where I was going to really enjoy it, that kind of deal.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. And it was, you know, this is 2001. So it's like Ryan Phillippe and all of these British people that I didn't know, but I vaguely recognized. And I was like, okay, well, it's got like manners and murder is what it looked like from the cover and the description.
That's all it should say under Gosford Park in these notes. Manners and murder.
Manners and murders. And so it does have this upstairs, downstairs sort of thing that became a little more popular later on with Downton Abbey. But the first time that I watched this, oh, and it had Clive Owen, and Clive Owen for me was like the thing for a long time.
Oh,
anything that he was in, I was like, ooh, I'm going to be all about it and I'm going to love it.
Is there Michael Fassbender?
He kind of was, and then he sort of disappeared and he's not really in much anymore. At least that I see anyway. And so that was my initial impression, and I remember just loving this. And I had like this, I had a superhero, Gosford Park sort of themed thing where it was like an upstairs, downstairs sort of deal where you had the public, like super people, but the super person would have like a little underling that would actually do all of the work.
The sidekick?
Yeah. And it would just be like attributed to the person because they would look fairly similar. Kind of how in the downstairs in this movie, they were called the names of the people upstairs. You know what I mean?
You wrote a story about
this? Well, I had like a whole pitch and everything.
Okay.
I was like all over it. I was loving it. It's just like when we watched Blue Valentine.
Ugh.
And then, which is one of my favorite movies ever, and Rachel didn't care for her.
It's depressing as shit. That's why it's your favorite.
And I really like that movie. And so in that one, we had that pitch where it was like the beginning and the end of someone's like superhero identity.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was like intercut between that. And this one would be like literally Superman that would be the public face that would do like the PR and that kind of thing. And then there would be someone that looked pretty similar to him and would wear the same shit and would go out and actually do all of the work, but wasn't really like, didn't have like the same capabilities as the person doing the show. And that was the sort of idea anyway behind all of it. And so anyway, so if there's a movie that makes me watch it and then want to write, that means that the movie actually impacted me in some way. So
sure.
It is a very long-winded way of saying that I really enjoyed it with the first time I watched it, and I really enjoyed it again this time watching it. So now is where I'm prepared for you to burst my bubble and tell me what you thought about Gosford Park.
I don't know if you're ready for this.
I'm ready.
Jelly. So it basically has all the elements of everything I could ever want. A British people, cast of like basically A-list British people.
Yeah, it's got Maggie Smith in it because everything does.
Ryan Phillippe, and murder mystery, like sweet, all of these things. No,
it didn't work for you.
So basically, like, from what I remember, if you're going to have a murder mystery and you're going to tout it as a murder mystery, the body needs to show up in, like, the first quarter of the book or film. And I'm watching this, and I'm literally an hour into it,
yes.
And I don't see any dead body.
Right.
So then I'm like, I'm still with it. I'm like, okay, so all of this exposition that we have before the old man actually died. First of all, it was kind of fun to see, for me to think who would die.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of this exposition, I'm like, this must pay off. I don't know if I just assumed things, but like, none of that really paid off for me.
Okay.
Like, it's fairly obvious that Ryan Phillippe, his horrible accent, and he's right off the bat, you know, he's not that guy's.
He's not Irish.
He's not Scottish. He's not Scottish, and he's not that guy's valet. And I mean, some of those people were so interchangeable that I honestly didn't even know what their story was.
Okay.
Like, there were like three people with bobs that were like some sort of sisters that were not the horse whisperer lady. And so like, I didn't even know what the hell they were doing in the movie, to be honest with you. And then spoiler alert,
Kelly McDonald
Clive Owen's mom.
Oh, not Maggie Smith, but Helen Mirren.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It was obvious that, like, was it not supposed to be obvious that, like, we knew immediately that that was the story? Or was that supposed to be, like, a big surprise? Because I was super unsurprised at the end. I was like, obviously, they had a weird conversation, and he's like, yeah, that's my mom. Duh. Obviously. And I'm like, oh, well, then does she know that that's the thing?
That's interesting. See, I didn't suss that out the first time I watched it.
Oh.
Because I knew that he had a weird, like, they had a weird conversation, and he talked about how he was an orphan, or he was at an orphanage, not an orphan.
Right.
And I was just kind of like, when that came up, I was like, oh, okay, is everything so British? I don't care. Whatever. You know, it's like, okay, I was focused on like, oh my God, I wish I spoke like this, you know, like I was just listening to that.
There was no Cockney.
I would not want to speak like that. That's you.
Hello,
yeah, that's you. That's not that
my fair lady.
I would not want to talk like Ryan Phillippe attempts to talk though. I do love that Kelly McDonald calls him out right away, though.
Oh, yeah. And I wrote, I love Kelly MacDonald. She was in, this is, people are going to judge me, I don't really care. Nanny McPhee is like a very obvious children's movie that I could watch several times.
Yeah, and she's, I mean, she was in No Country for Old Men, which was kind of the thing that I thought was going to, like, really break her out. Yeah. And then she's most well known for being the voice of Merida in Brave.
Yeah. I love her accent. I love,
and you like she's that in Scottish accent.
Yeah, and she's in Boardwalk Empire also, I think.
And she's Helena Ravenclaw in Harry Potter.
Of course, so I'm a Ravenclaw. That makes so much sense.
It makes all of the sense.
Right. So I wrote, I want to know if Maggie Smith has ever played a poor person.
Oh my God. I mean, doesn't she just, she just has like the British wealth thing on lock. Like great. That's so, all she does.
Yeah. And she's amazing.
Oh,
at it.
She's great at it.
Actually, she was in Secret Garden and she was the servant in Secret Garden, movie, but she was still just like Maggie Smith pretending to be a servant. Cause the guy who wrote this ended up writing Downton Abbey, correct?
You mean Bob Balaban?
Sure.
Or, cause it's, or no. Julian Fellowes.
Julian Fellowes. Yeah. And Maggie Smith is in that and she's like super rich and she's awesome. She's like hilarious. She's sassy. Like one of her lines is like, what's a weekend? Cause like someone says like, I have to work during the week. I can only get out on the weekends. And like, she's so rich. She doesn't even know what a weekend is, which nice. Like, how do you get there?
Yeah, really? It's called, what summers are like for teachers.
Oh, shut up. And then my next line was, I want to know if Kelly MacDonald has ever played a rich person.
Oh yeah. She's always, you're right. Yeah. She's always the poor Scottish woman.
The, like, very smart, humble, like, poor person, which I don't know what that says about, you know, how we feel about Scottish people. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's historically how history feels about Scottish people. It's kind of unfortunate, but I think that's where that lands.
Okay. So those are my two immediate notes. But so anyway, I did like it, obviously. I wanted to know... You know, I thought the inspector was pretty funny, the bumbling one who thought he knew everything.
Stephen Fry, Stephen Fry.
Little Pink Panther throwback, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
But.
Oh, obviously it's blah, blah, blah. Well, actually, sir, it's blah, blah. Yeah.
Sir, we haven't tested that for fingerprints yet. He's like, oh, sorry.
Yeah, he's handling all the things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it eventually like made its way to be done for me, but I feel like it just took so long to get to the meat and potatoes of what we were trying to do.
Okay, sure.
That it didn't really, it wasn't like, oh my God, what a great, crazy film. So.
Yeah, I think part of what it is in my experience with Robert Altman, the director, he is not super concerned with getting to it. Like, he's more like putting you in the world and here's where you're living. And oh, by the way, something happens while you're here. Instead of like, you're in and something's happening right away and then we're going to figure it out and then you're out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so for me, watching this the first time I watched it, and it was tough this time because it's like, I knew that I loved this movie. And so I'm trying to watch it. And it was hard for both of these movies, actually, because I was like, I know that I'm not going to like Boondock Saints anymore. I just know it. I just feel it. And then I knew that I was going to love this again, right? And so I'm trying to watch it constructively. And so, but I'm writing like, it's got such a slow opening, kind of like 35 Shots of Rum. Where it's like this life of wealth and power and manners, and it made me think of Jane Austen and the Bronte sisters and all of that sort of thing. And it's got this English countryside and mansions and manors, and it's just really taking its time. And then it smash cuts into the basement, and then there's like this hustle and bustle, and people are yelling all over the place, and it's cramped, and there's no real names. Everyone's got this false pretense, and I really liked that sort of juxtaposition.
Yeah.
And so I was in there And I was watching it, and I think what helped me the first time is I remember seeing it, and I remember knowing that there was a murder, but when I was in it, like, I forgot about that. Like, I forgot that there was a murder, and I didn't remember really what was going on when I got it, because I think it was like a deal where I put it on my queue, and then a couple weeks later, it just showed up. And I was like, oh, okay, what... I don't remember really what this is about, whatever. And I just put it in and watched it.
Okay.
And so I think that that kind of helped, because it's not, even though this is our Audible recommendation, it's not an Agatha Christie, like, whodunit, and here's the steps as to how we figured it out kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It is.
And I think that's what I was wanting.
Yeah. And so I think that that's just how it goes sometimes when maybe, you know, and it's not like, this is definitely not a movie for everybody. This is not a thing where, you know, I would expect Brad to fully dismiss the film.
He fell asleep.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's about sort of, you know, your lords and your servants and your representing your person and that kind of thing. And
I feel like it's kind of misleading, though, to be honest with you. Like, the cover of the movie is like, oh, there's a stabbing. And so you get here... And I got here and I was like, oh, fuck yeah, who dies? Like, let's get it.
Yeah, sure.
And because that, to me, have you ever watched Downton Abbey?
No, I haven't seen
it. It's legit the same thing.
Oh, okay.
It's the upstairs, downstairs. It's a very big, beautiful estate and very pretty rich people. And then same thing, you cut straight down to downstairs and it's all the ins and outs. So I can totally see... it's very similar.
Hmm.
And so you might like it, actually. I know that's weird to, you know, whatever, but, I love Downton Abbey. But I think in that world, having like a, not gruesome, but like having a very, like shocking something happen would be, I thought that's what it was going to be.
Okay.
We're going to take this very pretty scene and all these beautiful people. And then like someone is going to just freaking die. And then we're going to have like, and there were like the secrets and stuff, but they almost seem like, oh, everyone has a secret, like very obvious secret. And like, I don't even know what Mr. Jennings' secret was. I honestly can't, but like, I guess I just wanted, and I totally get what you're saying. Like this person is more set the stage and this mm-hmm. murder just happens to be part of it.
Uh-huh.
I think it may be one of the reasons that audiences didn't like it, first of all, was that it took an hour to get to it, but that it wasn't more like, I'm thinking like this scene is like a very pretty black and white, and the murder part was, to me, I wanted it to be like a red slash in the middle of it, where it's just like we're ripping this, like it just wasn't enough for me.
It was really prim and proper, the murder.
Right. Which I think would have worked better for me if it was like such a different
more like that. A downstairs kind of a thing instead of upstairs, because the murder is very like, oh, it's poison, and then it's like a one stabbing with no blood, which
and
they
we
talk
just hear
about.
A scream and a lady comes in and faints, which I totally get, but like, yeah, and then the motive behind it I thought was good, but like I said, okay, so this is probably not fair because like pieces of my life revolves around murder mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I'm watching it and immediately I'm like making a mental notebook of all the suspects,
right.
You know, and I'm like super intense on like, okay, I want to figure out who it is, but it was almost like not about, like you said, figuring out who it was.
Yeah.
It wasn't Agatha Christie. And I think I was just expecting that because that's how my brain works. And so like I said, when we figured out who it was, I was like, yeah, that was my guess. That was originally what I assumed was going on. So I thought there was going to be a big twist at the ending too. And there wasn't.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And spoilers, going in, but it's, you know, Helen Mirren and Clive Owen, like your main recognizable characters besides Maggie Smith and Ryan Phillippe, I guess.
Right.
Those are the two that sort of, did most of the legwork there. And
right.
And so I think what is interesting about it is this would be an interesting movie to revisit for you, like in, I don't know, like just the future, like the ambiguous future.
Okay.
When you realize that, okay, so this is not like, it's not a whodunit sort of a thing. It's just a, let's just watch this English countryside and, oh, there happens to be a murder also.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm usually the one where it's like, okay, well, I didn't like this at all, but it's because I thought it was going to be blah, blah, blah. And so I think right. It would be interesting to have you give it another go, like, in the sort of ambiguous future.
I think you're right. I think I was just in the mindset that this is going to be, like, one of those awesome, like, pick-it-apart
mm-hmm.
murder mystery. Because, like, the last couple British, like, murder mystery, like, shows and things that I've watched have been that, like, intense, like, awesome, try-to-figure-it-out kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're exactly right. If I would have known going in that this was more about, like, setting up the world and then, like, a little bit of payoff, rather than like just getting like really into it.
I think
you're right.
Yeah.
So
some of the things that I thought was so good and it's like we could spend a whole episode just talking about Maggie Smith and her lines.
Oh, I love her so much.
But one of them is when we have Bob Balaban who plays Morris Weissman, the American.
Oh yeah.
And he was the guy that had the based upon this idea is where this movie came from. And him and Robert Altman worked on that together. And then the creator of Downton Abbey was the actual writer.
Yeah.
But, so he is talking about the movie and all that sort of stuff. And he talks about not wanting to give it away. And Maggie Smith says, oh, well, none of us will see it.
We're not going to see it. Nobody.
And I laughed so hard this time because she's just like, oh, well, duh, we're not going to go watch this.
And everyone's quiet, and then the one lady, the horse whisperer lady laughs, and I thought that was funny.
Yeah, Kristen Scott Thomas.
Yeah, and also when the British actor is playing the piano and she tells him not to clap because it only encourages him, I was like, oh my god, that's amazing. And she's just not having it. And she kept saying things the whole time he's playing, she's like... Like, he starts playing kind of nicely, and then he starts singing, and she's, like, holding her card. She's like, well, that's not really background, is it? Like,
yeah. Oh, my God. She is the best. Like, she is the absolute best.
Yep.
She's
like England's Betty White.
She really is, except she's a good actress and not just, like, a meme that turned into a joke that turned into a thing.
That is very true. I've loved her in everything she's been in.
Yeah, really. So, I do think that... This is a real tour de force in the fact that I think all of the performances are good. And I think a lot of that is the cast, because if you cast good people, you don't have to really worry so much about performance because you know they're going to be good. But
right.
Ryan Phillippe playing, like, he feels like he's playing himself. Like, he's playing this poser, fake sort of guy. And he's got this shitty accent. And then they're like, oh, I could have told you that was fake, like, right away, right, is what she says. And then he's playing this guy where he's like, oh, I'll have some coffee. And it's like, yeah, it's over there. Like, go get it. Go get it yourself.
British men never get served breakfast.
Yeah, you know. Which I didn't know that, and I thought that was interesting the first time I watched it.
It's so ironic. We keep going back for, like, in Agatha Christie, and then there were none. They talk about that, like getting served on the side table.
Hmm.
It's weird.
That is weird.
I'm really glad that he was playing someone who is fake Scottish, because I was like, if we're trying to pretend that that's his real accent in real life, I'm going to be super mad.
Well,
it was very well done, but it was so obviously fake.
Yes.
So I'm glad that it was fake.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they were sort of, you know, he would, like, slip in and out of it a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I was glad that they did that, and I liked how Kristen Scott Thomas was, when they were going to bed or whatever, she was like, what was that? And then he repeats himself in a little bit better version of the accent.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and oh, she's yeah, like, she's onto him.
Well, and then it doesn't matter. She's like, well, we might as well move on.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a cold-hearted bee in this movie. Holy shit.
Well, when your husband just spends most of his life having sex with literally anyone else, I can only imagine how great you would feel about him.
Yeah, like, really.
I'm not saying anything, but...
Yeah, so this is one that that clearly I had a higher view on, which again falls right in line with our whole theme of things. Am I right, Cruz? So is there anything that we missed from Gosford Park? We didn't really give an actual rating on the Boondock Saints, but what would you give the Boondock Saints out of 5?
What's our little thing? Well, first of all, we both own it, so I don't really know how cool we can be about
well,
it.
Well, I will flat out say if anyone wants my copy, I will literally send it to them for free. Just message me and I will give it to you.
You'll pay the shipping.
I'll pay the $2 media mail or whatever. I'll do that.
I know I will watch this movie again in the future. And I don't know if it was like, it was okay, but like, I don't know. I would say a 3.5.
Okay. If people want to check me out over on Letterboxd, which has an app that I've been using obsessively now, where I've been ranking all of these movies, and it's been really tough because I like want to find the time for my OCD to kick in and to go and like pull Netflix up and just go side by side and rank all the shit that I've ranked in years past. But I'm determined.
You know how long that would take.
But I'm determined to not do that. But because now that Netflix is just thumbs up or thumbs down, it's like complete horseshit.
Yeah.
But anyway. On Letterboxd, I gave this a 1.5, Cruz.
Wow.
So there's that.
You gave it a 1.
1.5, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't, I mean, I'm bordering between if I'm going to warn people away from it or if I just wouldn't see it again.
I feel like you wouldn't, if someone's like, I'm going to go home and I'm going to watch Boondock Saints, would you literally be like, that movie's terrible.
I'd be
don't
like,
watch it.
That's not a good choice for your life, but have a good time.
That's just mean. Warning well, people away. Give them a chance to watch it and like see what they think. The only movie you should warn people away from is Old Boy. We've talked about this extensively.
That's what that half's in there for. It depends on that person. I'd be like, well, I don't know. You're probably going to like this. Like if Brad said, hey, I'm going to go watch Boondock Saints, I'd be like, yeah, you're going to fucking love that movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess.
It'd be like,
but that's what I'm saying.
You just got to know who you're talking to.
Yeah, know your audience.
Yeah, know your audience, exactly. What would you give Gosford Park? Because I clearly gave it a 5 because I love it.
I honestly don't know if I would watch it again.
Really? Interesting.
It was so boring. It's not a dick thing to say. I'm sticking to it. It was really boring. It was just like a bunch of backstory, and the murder was not my favorite. So I would go watch something where someone died, and it was awesome.
Coming soon from Miramax. also written and directed by us.
I would probably give it a 2.5 or 3.
Interesting. Wow. I like that we had such a disparity in our rankings this time. It's not good podcasting when we're like both like, yeah, I'd give it a 4.
It was
good.
Great.
Yeah. It's nice to have a little bit, not like an argument because we don't do that, but you know, it's like, I don't know. I think I hear what you're saying, but you're completely wrong.
Yeah, I think I like your points, but you're stupid.
I hear your words, but I'm choosing not to listen to them.
Right, so, forever.
Like that. Okay, so why don't you wrap us up, Cruiser? I think that's pretty much going to do it for audiences versus critics. I do like that we had a chance to talk about very wildly different films for a month or so.
Which, what does that say about audiences versus critics?
Well, I mean, ultimately here, I think that I mean, there are people that come to the movies for different things. Because some people are wanting just to watch a movie and be entertained by the guns and just not worry about if it wasn't that polished with the script, right?
And I feel like some critics just say they like the movie because they know that it's pretentious and they think it'll sound better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they feel like that because that recreates like a sophisticated lifestyle that they hoped to be part of, that maybe if they write about how glorious it is, that will help, like, that will help improve their own status in their mind.
Oh, he knows so much about being sophisticated. He must also be sophisticated.
Exactly. Like, the readers would think, oh, well, if he's talking about how good this movie is, maybe I should go and see it, and I'll be sophisticated, too.
Right. I'll be a better person.
Uh-huh. So I guess I can see where both audiences and critics are completely full of shit. And I can see where they're in it for what they're looking for. Like, I get that critics have to see so many movies, and a lot of them are shit. Like, the literal emoji movie is just an abomination, I guess.
It's literally an emoji of poop.
Yeah, I read a review already that had said one poop emoji won't cover this.
Sorry, I snorted it.
And so that's kind of how good that movie is. And so people, you know, they are getting paid, but still you, like, have to go and sit through this just awful shit. Just terrible movies. And so when there's something that's a prestige film, or when it's a film that they're supposed to love, I get where they can kind of be swayed. And then at the same time where they see, like, okay, it's a movie that's really for high school and college kids, and they're just swearing a lot and sexist and homophobic and racist, and I just don't have the time in my day to deal with this.
And I agree with that. I think, though, that sometimes they see, like, and I know some critics do, they're like, yeah, that was a pretty fun ride. And they can talk about how a movie is good also while talking about concerns they have with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that some critics do that, where they're like, yeah, I know this wasn't supposed to be the most life-altering movie, but it was super fun, and X actor did a really great job, and they were doing a good job. But I think that some critics are like, I will never give any, you know, good ratings to anything less than, like, Shakespearean theater.
Yeah, like a prestige film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. So. Well, and so that's why I think it's good that we talked about both of those, even though, you know, I sort of put the label on you being the audience person and me being the more critical person. I don't think that that's necessarily always true, because depending on the movie, like, I fucking love Caddyshack and Major League, and those are not quality films, like, you know, from an artistic standpoint, right?
Yeah.
You can't sit back and think, oh, well, hell, that's really high quality, blah, blah, blah. But
his dancing to his golf bag was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Exactly. But those are fun for me. And some of these audience films were just trying to be fun, but was like, oh, Jesus, like, you missed the mark. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. Every time I hear that, I think of the Team America World Police.
Now, see, that's a dumb movie that I think is funny.
I think that movie's hilarious, obviously. I'm laughing, and I didn't even watch it right now, so.
So there you go.
Yes. Okay. All right. You want me to wrap it up?
Yes.
Fine. If you have any comments for the show or movies you'd like to hear us talk about, please feel free to email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod. We also have a Facebook page and an account on Instagram. You can follow both of those by searching for Plain Label Podcast. If you wanted to help out the show, you could check out Audible, or you could head over to the Movie Noise website at movienoise.com. And there you can find the post for this episode, and you'll see our Amazon wish list as well as our Amazon link, where you can purchase anything you want at Amazon just like you normally would. And the only difference being, it helps us out by giving a little bit of that money from Amazon's pocket. They are so broke right now. Please help them.
That's true.
Head over to movienoise.com and check out the category Plain Little Podcast over on the right-hand side. Thank you for listening, and next week we will be back and better than ever with a new theme.